Thank you. Please be seated. I could stand to be held for this pronunciation, but we're ready to hear argument from the lector in M. Ray Shipley.
May it please the court, this is Scott Ramsey to represent arguments for the remainder. We later reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, we are here, as the court realizes, on a writ of habeas corpus filed on behalf of Adel Shestawi. Your Honor, is the correct pronunciation of that, Adel Shestawi. Judge, the question before the court today on this writ is simply whether or not a trial court has jurisdiction to enforce by contempt an order in a final decree of divorce that is the subject of appeal and that has not been the subject of temporary orders under various provisions of the Family Code. It is our position that, based on the prior ruling of this court back in 1983 in Ex Parte Boniface, that the trial court does not have such jurisdiction, and therefore the contempt order entered in this case is void and should not be enforced. By way of background, very briefly, Mr. Shestawi and his wife, the real party in this case, obviously were involved in a divorce proceeding in Harris County, Texas, a divorce proceeding without children, a final decree after a long and fairly contentious pending suit was finally entered by the court in September 2002, after some almost 2 years of litigation. Both parties at that point, I think it is helpful to know, were pro se and represented themselves pro se. Mr. Shestawi has continued to do so up until the time we have filed this writ. Following the entry of that decree, there was an appeal. There was first an amendment or a motion filed to amend the court's orders, which was never ruled on. That was filed after the appeal. An amended motion was subsequently filed that was never ruled on. Having failed to obtain a ruling from the court on that, Mr. Shestawi filed a notice of appeal. That was done in December 2002. He filed that appeal based in part on his dispute with orders for spousal maintenance that had been entered by the trial court based on a finding of family violence. Subsequent to that notice of appeal, a motion to enforce was filed by the real party, which ultimately led to Mr. Shestawi being found in contempt for failure to pay those spousal maintenance payments. He had prior to, and that order was entered by the trial court in May of 2003, May of this year. Prior to that, Mr. Shestawi had, on his own pro se, filed a writ of mandamus prohibition in the Court of Appeals, basically raising these same issues that the trial court lacked jurisdiction. There was a memorandum opinion entered by the 14th Court of Appeals. After Mr. Shestawi was held in contempt, I filed a writ of habeas corpus in the 14th Court of Appeals in a one-page per curiam memorandum opinion. They referred to that earlier opinion, all of which is in the appendix that have been filed in this court. Basically, our position is simply that the ruling in Boniface says that once an appeal is perfected, the power to enforce by contempt shifts from the trial court to the appellate court.
But as a practical matter, isn't the Court of Appeals going to have to ship it back to the trial judge to hear it? It's going to be very difficult for a three-judge court to hear evidence and resolve credibility disputes and that sort of thing.
Judge, that is one of the issues raised both in the Court of Appeals opinion, Bevins, which is cited in the briefs, as well as real party and interest. Yes, as a practical, that's what I would call or term their judicial convenience, judicial practicality argument. Yes, if it requires an evidentiary hearing, they would have to refer it back to the trial court.
And if they did that, which I would imagine they would do, wouldn't they have to be guided necessarily by the trial judge's credibility determinations, that sort of thing, once they get the record back from the trial judge as to on the evidence?
Judge, they would, much like a court of appeals has to be guided if you're reviewing a sufficiency of the evidence question. And you have the same issue. It's a court's interpretation based on the testimony, the demeanor of the witnesses, that type of thing that transpires in the trial court.
So if the trial judge is going to do it all, why not just let them do it?
Judge, I would say, first of all, because the statute doesn't authorize that. And then you can make a similar argument, I think, on property issues, for example. It's the argument that that's practical and certainly family cases are unique and occupy a unique role in our litigation process. But the practicality are there, the proper forum argument lends itself, for, like I say, to if you have a property issue, it would be probably more convenient and the trial court, again, would probably be the preferred forum to review that, except there's a long-standing history that property issues or those types of issues, once placed on appeal, shifts to the Court of Appeals, to the appellate court. I would argue the same thing.
If a trial judge, however, has entered a damages judgment, which is appealed, and no supersedious bond is filed, as none was filed in Boniface, in that damages action, the trial judge could proceed with rulings in aid of execution on the judgment, even though the matter's on appeal, correct?
That's correct, Judge.
Why? Boniface, pretty short opinion, I don't see a rationale or explanation for why, when no action has been taken to suspend enforcement of the trial court's judgment while it's on appeal, what's the rationale for treating the situation of Boniface different, in your opinion, from the situation of a trial judge that enters a damages judgment, which is not superseded?
Justice Wainwright, if I understand your question correctly, I think the difference in this case, as a practical matter, deals with the ability to enforce by contempt and incarcerate and imprison somebody as opposed to allowing them to execute on a judgment. My point in this case is, I believe, under the statute, the real party has a right to, which she has, taken a judgment and execute on that judgment. She has a right to proceed to attempt to garnish wages, file writs of garnishment, which she has. But I think the difference is on an issue such as this, where you have a spousal maintenance issue that is highly contested and is on appeal, I think the Boniface ruling says that in that particular case, the decision to enforce by contempt or possibly imprison somebody should be heard by the Court of Appeals that is hearing that appealed issue.
So is it fair to say that the difference between proceeding in the situation I hypothesized involving damages from this situation is liberty, jails involved?
Liberty due process arguments, that's correct. That, in my opinion, that is correct. And I think that's a large distinction, a vital distinction. Another distinction.
Well, to follow up in just a moment, in just a regular civil damage case, if there were a turnover order after the case to enforce the judgment while the case was on appeal, and it was to turn over a piece of property, personal property, say, to the judgment creditor, and the debtor refused, is it your view that the trial judge would hear that contempt case, or would you go to the Court of Appeals?
Judge, I think Schultz versus the Fifth Judicial District addresses that, and if I understand that ruling correctly, says that the Court of Appeals, if it really turns on whether the turnover order has been appealed. So I would draw that distinction. If the turnover order has not been appealed, then I think the power to enforce remains or is retained by the trial court. If the turnover order is itself an issue on appeal, I think under prior ruling of this court in Schultz versus Fifth Judicial District, it would have to be heard by the appellate court.
Well, actually, focusing on your answer to Judge Wainwright, you said that the prospect of loss of liberty was one thing that made it different. But isn't your position really that if you're being held in contempt for violating the very order that you're appealing, that has to go to the Court of Appeals?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct.
Okay.
Our position is, again, contrary to some rulings in the Court of Appeals, and I think a position urged by, also urged by Real Party, is that Boniface is the rule, not the exception. There is some language that says Boniface should be considered an exception in this field, and we would disagree with that. We believe that the exceptions, if any, have arisen solely in regard to child support cases, or really cases involving children under Title V of the Family Code. The reason I would say if exceptions should be applied to those cases, and when I say an exception, exception allowing the trial court to enforce by contempt those types of orders, I would refer, again, it has been raised in the briefs, to the specific statutory language in Title V, in 109.002, for example, which says even orders that have been appealed, final orders that have been appealed, the trial court retains jurisdiction. In 157, it vests that jurisdiction in the trial court. Also under Title I, 6.709, and also Title V, 109.001, they address a situation where after an appeal has been filed, the party that is not appealed has 30 days within which to seek temporary orders. That creates another statutory exception to that, and in those situations, the language says trial court does retain jurisdiction to hear those matters, even if they're on appeal. That does not apply in this case. Real Party in this case did not avail herself of that opportunity, and that is not an issue. So we come back to the language in Boniface and the language that has also occurred in cited by this case, by this court in Gombe, which was a writ case actually filed by opposing counsel, where they repeat that on final judgments, not judgments that are subject to temporary orders after appeal, but on final judgments, the power to impose, enforce by contempt remains vested in the appellate, or excuse me, shifts to the appellate court and is no longer retained by the trial court. That is the essence in this case.
Why would she need temporary orders for spousal support pending appeal if it was already included in the judgment? It was an ongoing obligation.
Judge, our position is that this is distinct. This is a spousal maintenance order that was ordered by the court grant. It was not an order in the decree that says temporary support is to be paid pending appeal. That would create another issue that has been addressed in other instances, but not this. I would suggest to you, or I believe, that the reason the temporary, that provision is there, in this case 6.709, is to cover just this type of situation where there is an appeal of a final decree, an order in a final decree, that has been appealed, and it gives the trial court judge then the option to decide whether to impose additional orders at that time that could not be or would not be superseded, or excuse me, that would be enforceable by the trial court and not transferred.
Are you saying that pending appeal, the underlying divorce decrees award of spousal support is superseded automatically?
I'm not saying that the ability if it's not appealed, obviously it's not superseded. If it is appealed, my argument would be the ability to collect a judgment, unless there's a supersedious bond filed, is not superseded. But the ability to enforce by contempt and imprison somebody for the failure to pay or for failure to follow an order, which it is of itself and the subject of an appeal, I would say yes, that supersedes the trial court.
Where's the statute that supersedes the spousal support pending appeal? Where is that? I mean, is there anything that says it's superseded?
I am not aware of a specific statute, Your Honor. May I finish?
Yes, please.
That says that this spousal support order, if it is a subject of appeal, would be superseded. That is the language of Boniface and a number of others that says final orders, once they're subject of appeal, the authority to enforce by contempt is transferred, and the authority to deal with those cases in many ways is transferred to the appellate court. I guess my argument would be there is no language in the Family Code that says trial court, if the order has been appealed and is a subject of appeal, the trial court automatically retains or retains jurisdiction to enforce by contempt.
There is a specific statute, of course, on enforcement of maintenance order. It doesn't really speak to whether it's on appeal or not.
That's correct. And that would fall under the general, I believe, the general authority of a trial court to enforce a final order.
It doesn't say final. That's my I'm just having trouble piecing all the statutes together.
Judge, I understand that, and I do too. My argument would be that then that allows the trial court judge on property issues and every issue to modify, to change, and to enforce by contempt things that have been filed or are the subject of appeal. And I don't think that is the state law. I think it's the case law, I think, but based on Boniface and others, says otherwise.
The relator remains incarcerated?
The relator has been released by order of this court judge. He was incarcerated from May 29th until October 14th when this court allowed bond.
On bond. But the underlying obligation has not been destroyed.
That's correct. He remains subject to a civil contempt purge order that says until he pays these arrearages, he will have to remain incarcerated.
Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument.
May it please the court, Mr. Sean Casey will present argument for the real party in interest.
May it please the court, my name is Sean Casey and I represent the real party in interest, Amal Shasawi. First off, I want to point out that he keeps talking about that part of the appeal is the appeal of the support order itself. His appeal was filed back on December 10, 2002. And to date, I have yet to see a brief or anything indicating what the points are on this particular appeal. In his notice of appeal, which he's got under tab 4, there's nothing in there that indicates specifically that he is appealing this spousal support award. In his docketing sheet to the Court of Appeals, which he filed approximately a month or so after the filing of the notice of appeal, nowhere in there does it indicate. It sits there and talks about property division, and there's a space there that says for other. But again, the only word that we have that he's actually going to appeal the spousal support order is what he's presented to this court in this original proceedings. That's not to say that I doubt that he's going to do it, but the fact of the matter is if we wait until there's that one case that I indicated in my brief where it says, well, the test is whether or not it's actually the subject of appeal. I mean, at this point in time, I have no verification that this is actually even the subject of a pending appeal.
So do you think the Schultz rule is unworkable because it turns on that distinction?
Yes. I think it's unworkable as it relates to, which is, again, why I think that the definition or the delineation, if you will, should be jurisdiction lies in terms of support orders in one category versus property division orders in another category. I don't think it's a matter of whether it's in Chapter or Title I or Title V where it's located in the code book, but I think it's a matter of what is the actual effect and what is the purpose of the order that's being enforced. That O'Carolan versus Hopper case clearly shows that they have defined that spousal support is not a property division. It's about taking money from future interest as opposed to dividing up what was divided there in the decree. Counsel continues to chastise us for the fact that we did not ask for temporary orders pending appeal. And quite frankly, that never crossed my mind. To me, that would be double dipping. What would be the purpose of when we've got an order that says we're getting $600 a month commencing immediately? They file an appeal, and within 30 days, I say, oh, by the way, give me some more money. What would the facts that would be different at that point in time that would be different than this? And the idea that we're supposed to, in order to somehow avoid some jurisdictional hoopla, to sit there and have two orders for like amounts of money.
There's a real possibility for the trial judge, trial court proceedings to disrupt the appeal. Why shouldn't you have to go to the Court of Appeals first, even if the trial judge is going to hear it, the contempt proceeding?
Well, the problem is again, because it's in terms of support, and the fact of the matter is just the slowness in which the Court of Appeals, in terms of what they're used to and what they're doing. I have filed and pointed out to this court in this very case, the property division part, which I filed the contempt and the non-suited, in terms of transfer and delivery of an execution of the document that was required in the decree. And I filed that back on May 26th against the Court of Appeals in San Antonio, and they've done nothing. And they said, well, we're just going to take it up with the regular appeal. And I mean, my hands are tied at this point in time. And it's one thing to say, okay.
Maybe the court wants them to be tied at this.
Well, I understand that, but is that correct that they get the right to decide when there's no supersedeas filed, that they get to decide whether or not support, which the trial court is the one that's going to be the judge of the character and the veracity and so on and so forth, that they make that decision without even giving us a time and place for hearing.
If you had just proceeded in trial court and the Court of Appeals thought that that was disruptive or impairing the subject of the appeal, do you think the Court of Appeals could stay the proceedings?
I think the Court of Appeals can always stay in trial court if that's what they so chose to do. We keep talking about statutory authority, and the statutory authority, he's saying we don't have any express statutory authority to do what we do. But the fact of the matter is the situation of child support, my understanding, there's no express statutory authority either, unless you're talking about this post-divorce temporary orders. The old cases, the Bivens case, those other cases, those were done by common law. They just said basically, from a practical standpoint, the trial court should be allowed to continue on enforcing this portion of their order without having to go to the Court of Appeals first. And so what I convinced Judge Rend of at the time was that because this is a support order and it falls under that same category, that the court should go forward and does have jurisdiction. And again, this is not something that there's expressed statutory authority on, but this is just the way that, in terms of common law, that the courts have treated these support awards. And again, the reasons are very clear and make a whole lot of common sense by the very fact that, in order to go the extra steps, and we're sitting here talking about support for people that obviously the trial court believe are deserving of support. Counsel indicates that, well, since she's not a child and it's not under SAPSR, that spouses aren't deserving of the same treatment of getting necessary support that children are. Now, I just don't think that's a good public policy or a stance that can be taken, particularly in a case such as this one where the court made a finding of domestic violence, where there was actually a conviction, an attempted appeal on this sort of stuff, and the amount of support that we're talking about is a relatively modest amount.
But is there a mechanism to supersede spousal support pending appeal?
To supersede it?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I think in terms of it, because again, I think it all has the, it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's the same as the child support provision.
But if we're dealing in an area with no express authority, what are we to make of the statutory difference between child support and spousal maintenance? Nothing, added that in for child support for belt and suspenders purposes?
Judge, that's what I'm saying is that I don't think there is any, because I don't think there's any statutory authority for child support either, except for pending appeal when you've got those temporary orders. He keeps pointing out that. But if you go back to the Bivens case, there was no statutory authority back then. If you go back to the other cases that said child support can be enforced at the trial court level, again, we're talking about child support not pending appeal, not temporary orders, but we're talking about child support and a final decree of divorce. And that final decree of divorce is now on appeal.
Well, there is a statute. I thought 109.002 deals with child support on appeal. It says expressly that it's not suspended unless the...
No, and my understanding is that, again, that's conferring if you're talking about enforcing the temporary orders on appeal.
No, it's on appeal from a final order.
All right.
It goes on to say on appeal from a final order with or without a supersedeas bond that does not suspend the order unless the CA suspends it.
But when the time that Bivens was done and the times of the other cases, that statute was not there.
But I'm just saying, well, now we have a statute that specifically addresses child support.
Doesn't address spousal maintenance.
It doesn't.
So aren't we to draw the inference the legislature sees those as being subject to different treatment?
I mean, frankly, I don't see. I think it was just codifying, the Bivens case, just in terms of that. But again, my feeling is that if this court had the power to do it in terms of the Bivens, with the others, then it also has the power to do it now. And I don't think it's countermanding the legislative intent or expressed desires of the legislature on that issue. When you look from the practical side, as Justice has pointed out in terms of the hearings and what's involved and the goal of sitting there trying to get a spouse back on her feet, obviously it's been totally defeated in this case by the fact that he's refused to pay a dime. Unless the court has any further questions, I really have nothing more to add.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
And please, Your Honors, I have a brief response. First of all, I would say that in regard to Mr. Casey's argument that this issue has not, the spousal maintenance issue has not been raised or will not be raised by Mr. Shestawi on appeal, I would first of all point out that in what has been listed as tab on the first set of tabs, tab 3, which was filed back in November, was a motion to correct. On page 7 of that motion to correct, entry 22, it clearly says incorrect amount and duration of spousal alimony. Now, he filed that asking, contesting and arguing about spousal alimony. He filed an amended version of that, I believe, at the end of November of 2002, which was attached to the docketing statement filed with the Court of Appeals. That docketing statement would be tab, I believe, tab 16 under the supplemental tabs. In under Roman numeral 10 of the docketing statements in regard to issues on appeal, he clearly references the amended order to correct. And on page 7 of the amended order to correct, it indicates incorrect amount and duration of spousal alimony. Now, he has not. He is representing himself pro se in regard to this appeal on the merits. He has not filed a brief. He has requested not 5 extensions, as indicated by counsel in their brief, but 2, both extensions to file brief filed while he was incarcerated in the Harris County Jail.
Let's suppose we were to agree with you and say you've got to go to the Court of Appeals. And let's say that tomorrow Mr. Casey goes to the Court of Appeals and asks for contempt order. Are you then going to argue that his only remedy was to have asked for temporary orders within the 30-day period, or do you concede that the Court of Appeals has the authority to enforce the divorce decree by contempt pending appeal?
Okay. Judge, that is a separate issue, and I certainly would not make the argument that he has lost his right to enforce something by contempt by not filing, asking for temporary orders within that 30-day window. No, Your Honor, I wouldn't argue that. Whether or not, and that's a separate issue, not in front of this court.
I'm just asking, in a practical manner,
I have doubts, Your Honor, whether or not a court of appeals or any court can enforce by contempt an issue from a final judgment that is pending in their court or is a pending issue on appeal.
Okay, that gets me to my question. What supersedes the spousal maintenance pending appeal? Show me, do the general rules of supersedious apply? What supersedes that monetary obligation in a final judgment?
Okay. And I will say supersedes in from the standpoint, I'm conditioned again, Your Honor, from the standpoint of enforcing it by contempt.
Let's just suppose this is an ordinary civil judgment. You pay me $30 a month for X number of months. Normally, that's not superseded on appeal unless you follow the supersedious bond rules. What applies in these kind of spousal maintenance cases to supersede the obligation to pay money pending appeal?
I'm not sure that there is any statute. I'm not aware of any statute that says that you can supersede it unless you file a supersedious bond.
And that was not done in this case.
That was not done in this case. But I would again, Your Honor, draw a distinction between that and enforcing at the trial court level something by contempt, which is pending.
But now I'm going to go back to my first question. Then. So assuming it's not superseded, it's an outstanding obligation, can the Court of Appeals enforce that order pending appeal?
I would say that under the existing law, I would probably believe that they could, although I would reserve doubts on that, whether they can enforce by contempt as opposed to...
How else can they enforce it?
Judge, they can... I think that the Court of Appeals can probably only enforce by contempt, but I would also point out that this real party has a right to take a judgment, has a right to try to obtain writs of garnishment and other things to enforce the judgment. The judgment is not enforceable merely by a contempt action. It's enforceable in other ways, at the trial court level, because the supersedious bond has
not... Well, we've got a statute that says it's enforceable by contempt, a final judgment. So why isn't this a final judgment if it hasn't been superseded?
I think that it's not a final judgment because the issue is pending on appeal.
And I'm asking you again, what's different about spousal maintenance that it's... it's superseded on appeal where other civil judgments aren't.
And again, Judge, I think the argument we have is not whether it's superseded on appeal or whether the appellate court has jurisdiction. That's a separate question, which I'm not arguing today. But the question is, based on Boniface and other rulings from this court, it says that the ability to enforce it shifts to the appellate court, not to the trial court. There is not a statute. I am not aware of a statutory provision in the family code that addresses that and says that once the spousal maintenance is appealed, it is superseded.
Well, there is a specific statute that says you can enforce it by contempt. And my only question is, this would be a final judgment, I think, but for supersedia. And you have to, normally you'd have to supersede a civil judgment, or you can, even if it's on appeal, you can move forward to collect it. And what makes this different?
Well, and I'd say, Judge, first of all, the order from this court in Boniface makes it different because it says otherwise. I mean, it says that the ability to enforce by contempt rests with the appellate court, not with the trial court, which is the issue in front of this court today.
But we didn't have a specific statute in Boniface. That's my question. I'm dealing with 8.8.
At Boniface, Judge, if I may finish, I think we had the predecessor statutes were similar, and I would disagree with counsel on that. They have been modified, they've been changed, but the basic statutes were still there that allowed many of these same things. As the court has pointed out, Family Code 109.002 is a very specific thing that addresses this. It says, not in regard to temporary orders, but in regard to appeal of family order or child-related orders in general, it is not going to be superseded, no matter what is happening. So I think the orders, even before the present.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments of today's causes, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All right. Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay. The Honorable the Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.